You're listening to the LCJ Q&A with Lights, Camera, Jackson, and I am so excited to be joined by the composer of the brand new big blockbuster Kong Skull Island, Henry Jackman. Henry, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
You are welcome. So, throughout your career, you have composed music for a variety of genres of films. You've got animation, thrillers, comedies, superhero movies, and now you're back with action with Kong Skull Island. Do you have a favorite genre to work in?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the grass is always greener on the other side. I think you sort of hit the nail on the head. I'm lucky enough to have moved around in enough genres, which has two great benefits. One, you're always evolving and changing and being challenged in different ways. And two, it's difficult to get pigeonholed. If you only work on animated films, it'd be like, oh yeah, no, he does the music for animation films. Or if you only work on action films, oh, you know, he's the action guy. If you've done a whole load of different things, it's great as a composer because, you know, you just have to face all these different musical challenges with different stories and different, you know, atmospheres to the film, but it also means you're likely to get asked to do music for a whole different variety of things because you haven't just done one thing, and people, I guess, have a bit of confidence that you might be able to tackle, a number of different musical situations.
And you've been so popular. You know, there are 6 major movie studios in Hollywood: Disney, Universal, Paramount, Sony, Fox, and Warner Brothers. And this is actually the first Warner Brothers movie you've composed. How does it feel to have now done the music for the 6 Titan studios?
Yeah, actually, I hadn't thought of it like that. Well, funnily enough, it's also, the King Kong is Warner's and Legendary, so it feels, and all the people I were talking to at Legendary, but you're right. I mean, funnily enough, when you're launching into battle musically and you know, you're consumed by things like writing the Kong theme and finding the orchestration, all the rest of it, you don't necessarily zoom back and have that. So I hadn't actually quite thought of it that. But no, I mean, I guess I'm just very lucky. If people keep calling to ask you to write films, you know, at least you're getting something right. I'll stick to the day job for the time being.
So was there really any pressure into being a part of this latest King Kong chapter because of the long legacy of this character?
Well, yes, not coming directly from Legendary Pictures or Warner's or anything. You naturally, as you know, if you've got any sense of history, but the way to look at it is to look at it positively as an opportunity. I mean, the great thing about, I looked at it more as a privilege. I mean, the fact that, it's great to work on brand new stories and ideas, but at the same time, a monster character like King Kong, like as you allude to, has this huge history and heritage to it, which, you know, on the one hand, you could be intimidated by it because you're looking at a heritage of Max Steiner and James Newton Howard and, you know, these epic films like Peter Jackson and all the rest of it. But the other way to look at it is it's actually, it's a great honor to be following in the footsteps. And there's things to learn from it. I mean, whilst the new Kong Skull Island, has its own flavor and its own twist on the story, and it's got like a 70s period feel, and it's set just after the Vietnam War, which means I got to use some cool psychedelic guitars and some other interesting textures. The thing to learn from the heritage part of it is, you know, to also preserve the grand symphonic thematic tradition of King Kong. But, that, you know, in a way that actually doesn't intimidate me. If anything, it's great. I mean, many contemporary scores don't necessarily lend themselves to a grand and sweeping traditional use of the symphony orchestra. Whereas, you know, with a character like King Kong, which feels epic and mythic, that's precisely what the doctor ordered, you know. So, and, I'm all too happy to bust out as many big grand symphonic moves as possible, whilst also keeping some other elements in there as well. So, yeah, it's a combination, I guess, of having a bit of history on your shoulders, but also, appreciating that and feeling it's actually, you know, it's a privilege.
Did you watch any of the original other King Kong movies while you were making this film to get some of that inspiration?
No, actually, once I started writing, no. I watched, so before I got involved, I think I rewatched the original and the Peter Jackson version. But, funnily enough, Jordan, the director, was such a sort of natural radical. there was almost a year zero. So, well, it's, you can't really have a year zero because you're dealing with a character that, you know, necessarily has this history and heritage to it. But the great thing about working with Jordan is he was, I don't know, he was sort of a natural radical and wanted, you know, obviously it was going to have these grand symphonic elements. But if anything, he was pushing more the, hey, you know, let's get, instead of just having needle drops on the one hand and then your score just being symphonic, you know, let's get some crazy guitars in there, and let's get some, you know, strange atmospheric tonal textures as well. So he was a great ally in pushing some of the more explorative elements, which isn't always the case. You know, sometimes you'll get a more conservative director who freaks out at the idea of having some detuned, odd, crazy guitar for one of the main characters in the film. But, you know, as long as it's all balanced out, and on the one hand you have the thematic, big orchestral symphonic material, then, you know, space opens up for some of these other, you know, other ideas that aren't so traditional.
Mm. And what's more challenging for you? Is it figuring out the right music for one of those intense action scenes or more for a low-key dramatic scene?
That's a good question. I don't know if one, I don't know if there's a rule like that, that one's more difficult than the other. I think because I've had to do sort of all of the above in the various movies I've done, I don't think it's that you can say action is more difficult than a dialogue cue or mystery or tension. I mean, it really depends on the difficulty of a particular scene is often to do with the very specific architecture of the scene. You know, sometimes the cue is challenging because many things are happening in the story all at once. And so sometimes the challenges for a particular piece of music aren't necessarily that it's mystery or it's action or it's suspense or it's romantic or any sort of the psychology of the music. Often what makes something tricky is when it's something to do with the mechanics of the scene. So something might be suspenseful, but then the movie cuts back to something else where suddenly it's more optimistic. And, you know, often things are tricky more in regards to the kind of mechanical crafting demands of a particularly complex scene.
So I'm really interested in your overall process as far as, do you usually attack a movie one scene at a time, or is it all at once? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, usually, if you're lucky enough to have enough time on your hands, I will develop really important, like, for example, the Kong theme, which is quite grand and classical, I developed away from picture just to get all the mechanics of that theme sorted out as a sort of separate piece away from picture. So you've kind of got your DNA at your fingertips. And then once you're confident that you've got your themes, as it were, away from picture, then I launch in to do, you know, the specific cues. And, you know, it depends on movies, but generally I don't go steaming into the third act and start writing. I do tend to start writing at the beginning because you tend to learn things as you develop that then become important later on in the movie. Sometimes I'll attack a scene later on in the movie just to check that a theme will work when it's turned into action music, for example. But generally, I will sort of, you know, start at the beginning and work through. Sometimes get stuck on a few areas and, like, move ahead and come back. But and often depends. Sometimes, you know, they're working and changing the picture at the beginning of the movie, so you skip ahead a little bit while they're you know, re-editing and so on. But generally speaking, I think, without sounding too conventional, I kind of start at the beginning and end at the end. Because you learn, you know, there's various things you learn. As you write certain cues, there'll be new arrangements and new twists on the theme that you discover as you write that then become useful as you progress through the movie.
And one of the most important, I feel like, scores that you have done in recent years for a movie was Captain Phillips, a film that needed a really powerful score behind it, and you received a BAFTA nomination for the score for the film. How did that make you feel?
Well, I'm profoundly honored. I mean, I always take nominations with a pinch of salt. Now, I don't mean that ungratefully. What I mean by that is very often, if you're ever nominated, it's also very much a reflection of the skill of the director and the overall appreciation of the film. So, for example, Captain Phillips, and it's actually an interesting example because it's a very different kind of score. Paul Greengrass, who's a fantastic director, coming as he does from almost a kind of documentary background, the music is absolutely the opposite end of the spectrum to Kong. It's not grand and symphonic and sweeping in quite that way, because that, you know, that wouldn't be appropriate for
right.
more contemporary and politically informed, you know, type of filmmaking. But, you know, when you receive an award, it's always worth remembering that no one ever receives an award for a movie that no one thought was any good. The fact that Captain Phillips was a fantastically well-crafted and quite thoughtful film definitely has an impact on whether you as a composer, you know, are considered. Because, you know, often if you look at nominations for Oscars and so on, very often the music nomination goes along with artistically appreciated films. Which it's interesting. I remember saying to a friend of mine, one day we should have, funnily enough, throughout the last 30 years of film music history, there have very often been very good composers writing very good scores, only to movies no one really cares about because they weren't very good. And they tend to get overlooked because nominations always occur to movies that were, you know, highly artistic or very much appreciated by everyone. So, for example, you know, to answer your question, you know, it was a great honour. And some of that honour really ought to go to Paul Greengrass and Chris Rouse for having put together, you know, such a good film.
Absolutely. And next up for you are the sequels of Wreck-It Ralph and Kingsman. You scored both of those original films. Do you go into these thinking that you need to top your own work?
I guess so. It's more... Instead, yes, I mean, obviously that would be ideal. Funnily enough, I think the primary sort of artistic concern is more figuring out, it's always a mistake to get complacent in a sequel. So, oh, you know, it's the same characters, we've already got the Kingsman theme, you know, this should be easy. It's always a mistake. You should think of a sequel as a fresh challenge, and more than trying to just sort of top the last one, it's more the importance of understanding what's unique and different, and what's the new thematic material. I can't give too much away, but in Kingsman there's a whole new... It's the Kingsman, plus they get a little help, shall we say, from over the Atlantic waters. I will say no more than that. But there's a whole new strain to it. So it's really avoiding any sense, just because you do have some of the thematic material carrying over, it's that you absolutely have to avoid any complacency and figure out all the areas of the sequel or the new movie that do need new material and a new approach, and also how you can push the previous material further than you did last time, and just understanding all the demands of the film.
Mm. And before we wrap, I gotta know, are you related to Hugh Jackman?
They sometimes ask me that in immigration when I come back. I'm so sorry to disappoint you, but whilst I am a Jackman, who knows, if you got a big enough, genealogical, I can't pronounce that word, If you had a big enough, you know, family tree, there might be some connection. But sadly, I cannot honestly say I'm related to Hugh Jackman.
I love that they've asked you that when you've had to show your passport through customs. That's amazing.
Because I think I've got a green card now, but when I used to have an O-1, you know, they would dutifully ask, as they should, you know, in immigration, what's the purpose of your visit? And I would go, oh, well, I'm working in, you know, I'm working on a movie. And, I, you know, if I didn't say composer, I'd be like, oh, we work out, are you? And they'd see Jackman in the passport. And they go, oh, are you related to Hugh Jackman? I'm so tempted to go, yep. But, you know, I don't think I can. I don't look similar enough to him to be able to get away with that. So, no, I'm not directly related.
But you are a protege of the great Hans Zimmer. I was out in California a couple months ago. I was outside of the Remote Control Productions Santa Monica studio. I tried to meet him a couple months ago, see if he was there. How did that relationship begin with you and Hans Zimmer?
Oh, well, that was a hugely important part of, I mean, the best education. I mean, I've been lucky enough to have an incredible musical education, you know, in a formal sense with all these choir schools, and I went to Oxford University and all the rest of it. But in all honesty, in terms of a real education for writing film music, being able to sort of watch, you know, a master at work, there just isn't a better education. I think I'd done an album called Transfiguration, where I was very influenced and impressed, or sort of floored by how brilliant, this was a while ago, Bjork had a couple of albums. One was called Homogenic, and the other was called Vespertine. I absolutely loved them because they sort of combined. It was kind of pop music, but it was really art music and had orchestration and choir and electronica. I just thought they were beautiful and brilliant. I'd done some pale imitation. I'd done an album of my own that sort of, you know, it had electronica and orchestration, and I don't think it was as good as anything Bjork had done. But, you know, in my own humble way, I was just trying to sort of combine all these elements. Hansa got hold of a copy of it and heard it, and I was sort of duly summoned, and we ended up having a sort of 2.5 hour chat about life, music, universe, and everything.
Mm.
And after which, I got to sort of be an apprentice, and I mean, I just couldn't have got more lucky. I mean, it's like saying, well, I'd like to learn how to play golf. So, well, do you want to hang out with Tiger Woods back in the Rummies? He's had a few injuries now, but you know, pick your sport. And the point being, to be able to witness the actual process of a film score getting made, and watching a master at the top of his game, you know, you just can't get a better education, I don't think.
Wow, wonderful. Well, I'd love to meet you at some point one of these years when I'm back out in California. Henry Jackman, thanks for joining me today, and best of luck with the movies.
Thank you very much indeed.
You're welcome. All right, Kong Skull Island, it's in theaters this weekend. Go see it. That was composer Henry Jackman. I'm Lights, Camera, Jackson with the LCJ Q&A.